TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports,
baby!
All the time. A division of Bell Media. It's Old Dutch Foods Game Day. On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Pollock. Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock. It's a dream come true, Ezra Pollock, I know. Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, and Michael Remus. Gentlemen, first of all, jam-packed show for you. This is going to be our playoff preview show, so we're going to get to that coming up in about 30 minutes' time. Before then, of course, we're going to speak with Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press. That's coming up in 15 minutes. It's Old Dutch Foods Game Day, Jets Lightning. Final game of the season goes tonight. We wouldn't be honorable men if we didn't look back.
We hung out with you.
That's not what I was getting at. We wouldn't be honorable men if we didn't look back and review our season predictions.
Because nobody seems to do this.
No. Everybody makes their predictions. It's just
you never hear about it again.
Exactly.
Big part of making your predictions...
being accountable.
...is going back and seeing how...
wrong you were.
...wrong or right you were.
Exactly. So we're honorable men, so we're going to spend the first segment looking back. This is, game 82. All the teams are in action. Coverage gets underway starting now. There's the crucial Detroit-Chicago game...
yes.
...that gets underway right now. So we're honorable men... and we're going to look at back at our predictions.
And Drew, we should mention, too, that you've gone on to illegalcurve.com and changed all of your predictions.
Yes,
of course.
You edited it.
Because I'm not an honorable man.
No.
I'm a dishonorable man, through and through. So let's start with the Atlantic Division.
All right.
Okay. So we had our Atlantic Division previews. I must give a salute to Ezra Ginsberg.
Hey!
Ezra Ginsberg was the only one of us who picked the New York Rangers.
Yep. Who do we have?
Everybody else in this room has the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Came down close down the stretch, but Ezzy, full credit.
Job well done.
Thank you.
You predicted the Rangers, they came through.
It's going to make up for me picking San Jose to win the Pacific. Well, I guess maybe they still will win.
No, they can still win the Pacific. Okay. You never know about that. Let's go to the Northeast Division, where Richie.
0-2.
Richie and Remus both took Buffalo Sabres.
0-2.
Not doing well. Ezzy and Drew. Both the Boston Bruins. Yep. Congratulations, Ezra.
Yep. And that was a pick that I know that Richie and Remus were probably torn between the Bruins and Sabres, but with those off-season acquisitions that they made, there were people picking the Sabres to win the Stanley Cup this year. Let's not forget about that. Yeah, so
Remo, not
the
good.
Fact that they didn't make the playoffs is one of the biggest disappointments of the year, so I don't fault Richie or Remus for that.
To quote myself on the prediction show, I'm very bullish on the Sabres.
At least you're being accountable.
Yeah, you've pulled up a quote that's embarrassing for yourself, so that's very good. The Southeast Division was best not spoken about. Nobody had the Florida Panthers.
What's done up? Done yet.
Still not done yet.
That's true. That's true. If things play out, if the Capitals win in regulation today and Florida does not get any points, the Capitals will have taken the division and we will all be correct in our predictions there.
Otherwise, I'm going to be 0-3.
Yeah, otherwise everybody's going to be wrong there because we all took the Capitals except for Kyle Kozier, who took the Tampa Bay Lightning.
All right, and that wasn't a bad
pick. Even worse than our pick.
Yeah,
wasn't a bad pick at the beginning of the season. Goaltending was just really not good this year.
Which wasn't last year, too, but they rectified it halfway through the season.
Central Division. No St. Louis Blues logos next to anybody's names.
No.
St. Louis Blues is obviously...
That's quite now. It's going to go 0-4 if Washington doesn't take over today. But one thing I think we need to qualify there in St. Louis, and we give Ezzy credit for being more bullish on St. Louis in terms of the playoffs, but I think our predictions would have been different had we known that it would have been Ken Hitchcock coaching, not Davis Payton. Because prior to the Hitchcock hire, the St. Louis Blues were doing what they had done the past few seasons, which was basically have a talented roster, but not do anything with it.
Right. And Richie, obviously, they had injuries last year, the way Brian Elliott and Yara Halak have both had unbelievable seasons. And, the main reason for me thinking that they would make the playoffs, I didn't predict that they would win.
No, but we'll give you credit again. Yeah, you did have them finishing second in that division.
Yeah. You've been on this year.
Lots of that makes up for the 3 years before that I wasn't on.
Yeah.
But, all of that young talent, and now they're healthy, and now that McDonald's back and D'Agostini's back and Perron, we're going to talk about them a little bit later. But, that was a team that was really underachieving last year, and, they turned it around this year. But, to Richie's point, Ken Hitchcock did change the culture of the team around big time.
Northwest Division. I think we can just skip over the Northwest Division, right?
Well, hold on. No. Because you had your
my bold prediction.
Yeah.
Karnak, is that a Calgary Flames logo?
Karnak over here. Remus, pipe in.
So, you know, going through the predictions, I just want to say one thing. I think everyone in the predictions, someone had a really good prediction, but they would also have a terrible prediction.
Yeah.
And this was probably the worst prediction that anyone had on the show, October 1st. It's on the website. Drew predicted Vancouver would miss the playoffs and Calgary...
I'm still confident they're going to miss the playoffs.
He had Calgary finishing first in the division.
What do we do? What were the comments at the time?
Well, the comment was, Richard, let me just pull it up here. As usual, you were polite about it. You asked me what I was drinking, and I responded by saying, you can throw it back in my face 6 months from now, and it would be my pleasure to have you do it to me. So, this is you throwing it back in my face. Yep. That's right.
We're happy to do it.
It's a good prediction, Drew.
Okay, thank you. And the final division, the Pacific Division, and it's still up for grabs.
Yep.
Richard and Eddie and myself, we took the San Jose Sharks. Mm-hmm. And Remy, you took the Los Angeles
Remo.
Kings. So I'm calling him Remy. I'm not calling him Remo. And Remus took the Los Angeles Kings,
okay.
And we will find out later on today who's right. And, of course, the Phoenix Coyotes could very well win that division.
Yeah, no.
Well, you know, the one thing also with Pacific is Richard was very adamant that Phoenix would take a step back mm-hmm. and finish last.
True. Yeah.
Also saying at the time Mike Smith wouldn't do the trick.
I would argue that they did take a step back. I don't think they took a step forward.
Well, they definitely didn't take a step back because they didn't finish fifth in the division.
We're going to get into it a little bit later, but Mike Smith is...
They're junk, but...
Mike Smith has stood on his head. Without Mike Smith...
He's been good. Hey, I was wrong on both of those.
But he said that Mike Smith... the direct quote is, Mike Smith isn't going to do the trick.
I agreed with him.
I know, so you're both wrong.
Yep.
Okay, as long as we've clarified that.
Everybody's thrown under the bus here.
Obviously, we can't get to our... conference champions yet. We'll do that towards
the... Well, the players.
Let's go to
the
players.
That's where I did a little bit of work. Yeah. You know, this was a terrible season for me. Holy smokes.
Yeah, it was pretty bad for me and the players, too.
Art Ross. Richie, you took Anze Kopitar. At which point, as he said, that's a reach.
It was a reach.
Yeah. He was amazing in the first half. He was leading the points race for a little bit in the beginning of the season.
Ezzy, you took Ovechkin.
Yep.
Remus, you took Steven Stamkos.
There you go.
And I took Evgeny Malkin.
Malkin's.
So Drew gets the props there.
Yeah, take it.
Hart Trophy, Richie Stamkos. Ez, you had Ovechkin. Remus, you had Ryan Miller, and I had Jonathan Toews.
Miller,
not a great pick there.
And once again, the Toews pick was
Taves
good
halfway through
while.
The year.
For the Calder Trophy, Rich, you had Gabriel Landeskog.
I think he's gonna win it.
I think he could very well win that.
Right.
That's gonna be good. Ez and Remus, you both had Scheifele, and perhaps he's gonna win the Calder Trophy in Barrie. I'm not sure, but I don't think so. And I had Adam Larson.
There was a lot of hype about Scheifele after the exhibition game. We should have been calling him Hypely.
I like it.
Remus, I was sitting beside you. Sorry, Remo.
Terrible.
I was sitting beside you at that game. I didn't tell you. No, Scheifele.
For the Vezina Trophy, both Rich and I selected Pekka Rinne.
Not bad.
Yep.
Ezzy, you have Henrik Lundqvist.
Lundqvist
between those two, I think.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Where are you getting these numbers? I said Rinne. You said Vokundru.
I apologize. It's true. I did misread that.
True. Those are the picks that you went back onto the website.
And changed. Selke Trophy. Rich, you have Franz Nielsen.
Who I really like, but I don't think he's going to get consideration.
Ezzy, you have Pavel Datsyuk.
Right.
Remus, you have Richards. I'm assuming Mike Richards? Mike.
Yeah, that was at the suggestion of Richard. He said take, because we were all going to take default. I said Datsuk's the default pick.
I had Datsyuk as well.
I think Backus wins that, by the way.
Yeah. For the Norris Trophy, Rich, you have Brent Burns.
Terrible bust.
Yeah. Ez, you have Drew Doughty.
Had a little fun with that one, but that was...
That's a bit of a bust as well.
Yeah, both busts.
Remus, you have Drew Doughty also.
I have Doughty.
And I have Shea Weber.
I think Shea Weber should win it.
Carlson or Weber. So you're going to be 50-50 shot there. Not really, but close enough.
For the Jack Adams Trophy, Rich, you have John Tortorella. Here's the following quote. Richard says, people are going to fall in love with John Tortorella. Ezzy responds with, well, Larry Brooks already has.
And then I did my own Larry Brooks imitation 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. So we all appreciate that. Ez, you took Claude Noel. Remus, you took Claude Noel. And I took Dan Bylsma.
Yeah, I didn't remember doing the Tortorella pick, but I'll take it.
Yeah.
I still think Claude Noel, gets a very good grade this year, and he's done excellent work.
Jack Adams, I think, goes to McLean or Hitchcock. I think that Tippett will be in the conversation. I think Tortorella will be in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I think Kevin Dineen will be in the conversation.
Yep. It's a good year for coaches.
Surprise forward. I think Richie's going to win this one hands down. Jamie Benn is who you took, Richie.
Yep.
My boy.
Ez, you took Burmistrov. Leaves a little to be desired.
How many points did Ez say he'd get?
50.
He's got 30, close to 30.
Almost 50. It's just over half the same. Yeah. Ream, you took Brian Little, and I took Tyler Seguin, which resulted in Richard giving me an Ake.
Would you like to do it for the audience? He's a second overall pick. How is he a surprise forward?
Disappointing forward. Rich, you took Jerome Iginla.
He didn't disappoint. No. I think he was better than people. Better than I thought he'd be. Give him credit. You got to love him. But
his numbers were down.
I thought he would fade off this year.
His numbers were down, so I mean, you didn't.
Yeah, but not as much as I thought they would.
Ezzy, you took Danny Heatley.
That was right.
Yeah.
He had a terrible year.
Remus, you took Eric Cole.
But did people expect? Well, that's a lot. Remus.
Yeah, Eric Cole had 34
career year.
Goals.
34 goals.
I think I said there's no way he's going to live up to this contract. I don't think he can live up to it, but he.
You know what, Remus? You know what, to Remus's credit, Montreal was disappointing, so we're going to give Remus a pass on that.
Why are we giving him passes? We don't give passes on the show. We can't see a disappointed player, and then
he has the best year of his career.
I think
you got to get called out.
Remus, first time I've done that.
I took Marty Havlat.
That's a good pick.
But the injury.
Now, the one thing about the Havlat and Heatley guys, though, is did they not do exactly basically what they did last year, just in different positions? So were they disappointments, or were they what they were?
How many questions was that?
A lot.
Surprise defenseman. Richie, you took Ryan McDonough.
Hey. Good pick.
Hey, now.
Top pairing defenseman.
Ez, you took Zach Bogosian.
I think he took a step forward.
I think McDonough beats Bogosian.
I would say so. Remus, you passed on this one.
Yeah.
That's wicked.
And then Richard told me to take Goligoski, so I took him.
Yeah. And I took Joe Corvo.
That was
the worst.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we make fun of you on that one?
You didn't at the time.
I like Joe Corvo, actually.
Okay. No, I still power like play Corvo. Guy.
Disappointing defenseman. Rich, you took Keith Yandle.
Numbers down a little bit.
You know what? Hey, he's...
He has like 15 less points.
Watch the Coyotes. I think he's taken a little bit of a step back, frankly. But
yeah.
Ez, you took Ryan Campbell.
Definitely wrong on that one.
Yeah.
He has the second most assists in the league, I think. 50 assists.
And Remus and I both took James Wisniewski, which was the sort of...
You were right on that one.
It was an odd.
That's a magazine pick.
Yeah. There you go. It's a magazine pick.
Quote Ez, that's a magazine pick.
Surprising goaltender. Rich, you do not win this one. Jakob Markstrom.
Well, he was injured all year.
I thought he was going to come up there because I thought Theodore and Clemenson would both falter.
If a guy gets injured, it kind of nullifies the pick.
Yeah.
I think next year he might be the right one there.
Ez, right on your heels of your six things you learned last week, Corey Schneider was your surprise goaltender. I'm not sure what the surprise was.
His numbers have been insane this year. I don't know if it's a surprise, but...
Ream, you took Pavlik.
He's impressed.
I think that's a good pick.
I don't think it's a surprise. I picked Pavlik in that one last year. He's about the same.
He's played more games.
He's played a lot of games. He's won some games. I don't know if he's lost games.
I wouldn't say it's a bad pick, but I wouldn't say it's a nails pick.
I took Devan Dubnyk.
Yeah.
I like Dubnyk, big goalie.
Disappointing goaltender. Ez, congratulations. You can win this award hands down.
I was wrong.
You were wrong. Your disappointing goalie was Jonathan Quick.
He might be a Vezina candidate.
Wow. He definitely, I think, will be a Vezina candidate.
Yeah. Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Rich, you took Tim Thomas.
I think he disappointed this year.
He started off well, and then he tailed off the last 25 games.
He wasn't very presidential.
Disappointed on the ice or disappointed in the public eye with his political views?
I think a bit of both.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was awful.
No, he was...
They're second in the
conference.
Yeah, what are his numbers at the end? I'm sure they're very good.
Yeah, exactly. Remy, you took Luongo?
No, not a bad pick.
He's
played well.
Luongo's numbers are better than Thomas's, I think, though.
Probably. And I took Antti Niemi.
We should check that. Reams, can you check that?
I think the Niemi pick out of that is probably the best.
Not bad.
No. Well, the best for disappointing goalie? No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, probably. I mean...
Most accurate.
Yeah. And that's it for the individual pick. So we'll revisit this come playoff time. Oh, hang on. Let's go. This is all of the different playoff teams. Ez, here are your playoff teams. Vancouver, San Jose, Los Angeles.
He's right there.
Chicago, these are, I guess, your West playoff teams. Chicago, Detroit, St. Louis, Nashville, and Anaheim.
I got all of them right except Anaheim.
Yeah.
7 out of 8.
Rich, you have San Jose, Los Angeles, and Anaheim. Vancouver, Calgary, Chicago, Detroit, and Nashville.
I think they had the same ones.
So I had two. I had 6 out of 8. I had Calgary and Anaheim in there.
Calgary, sorry.
I had Chicago, Detroit, Nashville, St. Louis, Calgary, San Jose, Los Angeles, and Anaheim. So I also had 6 out of 8.
So I didn't have Phoenix and St. Louis, eh?
That's right.
The Eastern teams are there too, I believe.
Maybe they're up here. Yeah, here are the Eastern teams. Before we go to Ed Tate. Ez, you had Washington, Carolina, the Rangers, Pittsburgh, Philly, Boston, Buffalo, and Tampa.
So you're 5 out of 8.
Which is odd because you had picked the Jets to make the playoffs and then didn't pick the Jets to make the playoffs.
Yeah, it is odd.
Then you switched the Jets for Carolina.
Yeah, it didn't matter. You're still wrong.
True.
Rich, you had Boston, Buffalo, New York, Pittsburgh, Philly, Washington, Tampa and the Hurricanes.
So I have the same
six
as Ezzy,
of eight.
5 and 8.
Yeah.
And I had the same
as... terrible predictions this year.
I had the same as you, except for Montreal instead of Carolina.
Well, yeah, of course you did. You just copy and pasted Richie's picks.
Check on the Thomas versus Luongo numbers.
We'll get back to that later. Let's go to break. When we come back, Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done.
You need to see Ezzy on Friday go all out for a Carbone coal-fired pizza. We were at a private function.
Yep.
At Carbone, and there was some pizzas lined up around.
Private functions.
There was, Drew, you were not allowed. And there was pizza lined up, Drew. There's many pizzas available. And Ezzy stood beside one, and I think you had like 10 pieces in 5 minutes.
Yeah, 10, 12, 15.
No, you're not exaggerating.
Yeah, it was really good pizza, and I didn't really have a good lunch. So it was unbelievable. It was a good time. My friend Adam Chizik and Aaron Pfeffer's birthday. Really good times. You got to go check out their pizza.
We're having your hockey draft there on Monday.
Yep. I love the pizza that they have with arugula on it. It's just, you get a lot of...
Because that's the closest thing you've come to eating a salad in the last 6 years of your life.
That's true.
Salad's for rabbits.
for rabbits, you say?
Yeah, it's not really food. You eat a salad so you get ready for an actual meal. You don't... Salad isn't a meal.
We're waiting to get Ed Tate on the line any second now, so as soon as we get Ed on, we'll finish with Ezzy's soliloquy about salad.
If Ed doesn't answer, can we just have a segment with Ez Tate?
Ez Tate?
And then Ezzy answers as Ed Tate.
If anything, when you have salad, you have to put croutons in there.
Because croutons are...
Well, it's just, it's lettuce. Salad just lettuce. It's not enough.
Alrighty. Anyways, we'll get to Ed Tate momentarily as soon as we get him on the air.
We should talk Jets.
Final Jets game of the season tonight. It's amazing that it's happened this quickly, but, you know, game 82 doesn't really count for anything. Just pride, I guess, at this point. And to the Jets' credit, they've been playing with a lot of pride this week, because none of the games this week have mattered.
Yeah, playing hard.
So I expect you'll see another good performance. The only thing that's sort of going to be interesting is if Stamkos gets 60.
Yep.
That's the only thing really worth watching today.
Yeah. I mean, does Stamkos get his 60th?
In terms of, like, as a hockey fan, I mean, obviously, it depends on the results for the draft. But, I mean, Stamkos being 59 goals makes today more interesting than it would be had it just been, you know, any other game.
Well, Richie,
I mean, he's the best scorer in the league right now. He's dominant. You watch him. He can score from anywhere. And if you had to put my money on it, I'd say he gets it today because he looks motivated. He looks that good. He's arguably the best player in the National Hockey League.
He's had an unbelievable season. There's obviously Stamkos' chase for 60 goals, but today's game against the Lightning, it works out nicely because it's the last day of the season. All 30 teams are playing. It's a home game.
Which I like, by the way, the whole Super Saturday, because every other year, you know, it's been Sunday games on the end of the season, and the playoffs start Wednesday. The playoffs still do start Wednesday, but now they have Super Saturday, which makes it more interesting as a hockey fan.
Yep, and really... today is all about memories. There's going to be the Dan Snyder Memorial Award, which started in Atlanta in 2004. They're going to give that out.
It's nice that they're continuing that.
Yes, it is, for
absolutely.
Sure.
And there's going to be video tributes throughout, we're told. So it's going to be a really nice way to end the season. It's great that the season ends with a home game to come full circle with the opening game versus Montreal. So it's going to be a really fun atmosphere, I think, tonight at the MTS Center.
Mm-hmm.
It should be, and, you know, it'll be an opportunity. I expect the Jets to come out, and the Jets should dominate this game. I mean, I expect they'll to come out, have a good performance one last time for the
crowd,
home fans.
The crowd should push this team to a nice effort tonight. I don't
absolutely,
know.
Yeah.
You know, Tampa has that Stamkos goal to play for, but say he even gets that goal, then they have nothing to play for.
Personally, I'd like to see Stamkos get that goal.
Yeah,
60 goals isn't something you normally see.
Nope, there's only been one player since the lockout, Ovechkin.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, if he gets 60, then you're doing something pretty good there, obviously. And, you know, Tampa's got to retool this offseason. And I mean, you know, Richie, you had the opportunity. You were on HNL yesterday, and Huss interviewed Steve Yzerman, and he knows the job that's ahead of him. He's got some good building blocks, but he needs, you know, they have to upgrade in goal.
He's got. They're in a lot better position than the Jets are moving forward.
Right, and they traded Pavel Kubina. They traded Dominic Moore. They got draft picks.
They sold when they should have.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That's one thing that, you know, looking back at the Jets, they would have sold a little bit more. Chicago just scored, so that's interesting.
We'll keep you updated on the Blackhawks Red Wings game, which is on right now.
But you know, when they made the trades, they made the trades for draft picks, right? You know, they made the trades for draft picks, and They ended up, what are they, tied with the Jets right now?
One point behind, I think, Richard.
So, I mean, I like what Stevie did. Yep. I think Stevie Eiserman is a heck of a GM. He's got a really good assistant GM, Julien Brisebois. And if I were the Habs, I would take Julien Brisebois from Tampa. And I would, and I think the Habs actually is a better position than people are giving it credit for.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program Ed Tate from the Winnipeg Free Press. Ed, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. I apologize for being a few minutes late, boys.
No worries, Ed. We won't hold it against you.
All right.
We'll just heckle you in the press box tonight, but we normally do that anyways, right?
Yeah, I'll be counting how many ice cream you have then.
Well,
it's always Drew that's sneaking all those ice cream bars in his pockets.
Yeah, exactly. Ed, we're just talking about the season. It comes to an end tonight, of course, with the last game. You know, in your estimation, is this season a success for the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, yes, in the sense that, you know, I think we forget how fast they had to kind of pull up roots and resettle in Winnipeg, and they had to do so much that stuff that doesn't necessarily show up on the ice. So in that regard, I would say yes, just in getting their own roots established in Winnipeg and making things work and showing that they're a credible operation. But, you know, in terms of the on-ice product, you know, Claude Noel just spoke about it a little while ago at his press conference, and Mark Chipman said the same thing yesterday, is that if you don't make the playoffs, then that part of it is considered a failure. So in my mind, it's a little bit of both.
Ed, you mentioned Mark Chipman's press conference, and one thing that's not debatable as far as being a success or a failure is the way the Jets did off-ice in the revenue department. Mark Chipman announced that the team is not going to qualify for revenue sharing, and True North Sports and Entertainment obviously is a private company, and they're not going to release, you know, how much profit they made. But, you know, is it safe to say that the profit they made is, you know, a significant amount?
You know, I don't know that. I know that what they said yesterday can be interpreted a couple of ways. And, you know, I saw one headline where it said the Jets are one of the NHL's richest teams. And I don't think that's accurate. I think all he was saying yesterday is that they weren't going to be a team that has to rely on revenue sharing. And that's a year-to-year thing. The business itself, I mean, I don't think there's any question that they've sold a gazillion dollars worth of merchandise and that, you know, you can't go anywhere in this town without seeing someone without a Jet logo on. You know, I think that the fact the building sold out, we know all those things. There's certain guarantees with how they've set this business up that, you know, the sellouts for the next 3 to 5 years, the suites are sold. You know, ticket prices are going to go up a little bit for next year. So I think that the way they've run their business is really impressive, but there is a certain ceiling to it because of the size of the building. So, you know, I don't know if we can say that they're one of the NHL's richest teams, but let's say this, they're one of the NHL's best run teams.
Ed, if you're looking at the, you know, you look at the active roster this year and Kevin Cheveldayoff and Claude Noel and the management group and the coaching staff have had a year to kind of take in what exactly the team has. If there's maybe one player off the active roster that you think moves this offseason, who would it be?
That's a great question. You know, I don't like playing the rumor game, but let's do it anyway. You know, they've got an awful lot of defensive depth in the minors, too. And a guy that I think, I mean, people can talk about moving a Spencer Mihajluk or a Tim Stapleton, mm-hmm. but what does that get you in return? Right. You have to move an interesting piece. And the one to me that they could possibly move is Tobias Enstrom. I think he's a slick player. I like his game. And, you know, but they do have, you know, Paul Postma is on the AHL All-Star, first All-Star team. Right. They've got that kind of offensive defenseman in their system. That's a guy that I think that they could move and maybe get something in return. Now, we're not going to get, the Jets are not going to get a number one center or anything like that straight up for Tobias mm-hmm. Enstrom, but it's something that you could possibly package, you know, maybe with a draft pick or something else to improve your top six. And that's, I think, what they really need to do is find, you know, preferably a center, preferably someone with some size that can augment what they have already.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ed Tate from the Winnipeg Free Press. Ed, it's, obviously at the end of the year, it's time for reflection. Who would you declare as your most disappointing player on the Jets and your most surprising player on the Jets?
Oh, that's a good, I never thought of those. Off the top of my head, I guess surprising is a tough one, but a guy that I really have been impressed with that, you know, we, maybe I unfairly had him pegged as a different player when he came up here was Zach Bogosian. And it was a minus 27 last year, and had heard an awful lot about, you know, him being fourth overall pick and not living up to expectations. But the more I watch him, even in the last week with all the points he's put up, it's just like, it seems like the potential with this guy is limitless. So I'm not sure if that fits the surprising, but that's one guy that I would kind of peg there. As far as disappointing, that's really tough for me because I'm not going to pretend that I knew a whole lot about the Atlanta Thrashers before. You know, I guess what I would do is attach a salary to that and say that, you know, Ron Hainge's been capable and Nick Anthropoff has had his moments, but for the amount of money that the organization is playing to those two guys, I would say that they would maybe qualify as disappointing.
And in today's Saturday's Free Press, there were 6 pages about the Jets season, a season to remember, and you wrote an article about with the headline, "Never again is there going to be a season like this." As far as, you know, there have been tons of awesome memories at the MTS Center this year, obviously on the road too, but is there one memory that stands out for you as, you know, the most memorable moment of this inaugural season?
You know what it is for me, guys, and it's funny, is that when the fans belted out True North during the national anthem, I get chills. And I'll tell you what's interesting is I find myself from my little spot in the press box looking down to see the visiting media, to see how they react to that. Because, I don't know, that to me just kind of encapsulates the passion for this team from fans. You know, there's been a lot of wonderful on-ice moments. That Washington game a couple weeks ago, the Boston win in December. There's a pile of them that you can all add up. But to me, if you're kind of want to kind of sum it all up in one moment, it's when fans yell True North during the anthem, and you hear it on the road too in certain pockets. To me, that's the coolest thing, and to me that really speaks of how this town has grabbed the Jets and kind of pulled them close to their heart again. It's such a wonderful story, and I think that represents it best.
And we can talk about players, you know, possibly moving players, you know, parts of the team that management will want to address, but there's two key cogs that are up for restricted free agency this summer, being Evander Kane and Andre Pavlik. Have you got any indication from the people inside the organization at all about maybe what kind of term they're looking to give these guys, whether it be, you know, 1 year and see where they're at, 2 years? They kind of seem to like 2 years with Wheeler and Bogosian last year, or is it more of a long-term commitment?
Yeah, I don't know, guys, because you know how what it's like over there dealing with those guys. They keep it pretty close to the vest. Yeah. I would imagine that for a guy like Pavlik, they would probably put a longer-term contract on the table, because he's established himself, as a franchise-type goalie. For Evander Kane, I'm not saying that it would be the same as a Bogosian deal, but maybe like what they did with Blake Wheeler. I think they want to lock these guys up for, you know, people like Kane and Pavlik have shown that they're cornerstone type players. And I think that those are the guys that you'd like to have beyond 1 or 2 years. You'd like to say, these are the, you know, the 5, 6, 7 guys that we're building around. And those are two key names you just threw out that I think that they should be Jets for a long time. And I'm sure that management will pile the money up for them.
Ed, after the game against the Islanders on Thursday, I thought Claude Noel showed a surprising amount of passion or anger towards the way his team performed. You know, what sort of grade would you give Claude Noel on the job he's done as head coach for this team?
You know, I would probably say B+, A-, guys. I mean, if you look at that lineup, and we talk about this a lot, if you take the Jets lineup, the roster, and you compare it to who they're playing against every night, almost every night, you say, wow, the other team, they've got this guy and that guy, and look at this. And the Jets, you know, there's a sprinkling of AHL-type players on this roster still. I think Claude's done a really good job of getting an awful lot out of guys, you know, who had been disappointments before, who had been underachievers. And more importantly, I think what you're talking about, that Islanders, his reaction after the Islanders game, I think he was angry and disappointed because they've talked about this all year, about the changing the culture and how you approach a game, and he wasn't happy with the way they started. And I think that's the message that takes an awful lot of a long time to get established. But Claude's done a pretty good job of that. I think the players like playing for him. You don't hear, very much grumbling about, you know, how he's handled situations. He seems to work well with Charlie Huddy. But the fact that it's a team that's, you know, had a lot of AHL players and a lot of players who have underachieved, who have in turn had career seasons, and he's really squeezed the most out of their talent, I think he's done a really good job.
Maybe you can't give a grade, Ed, to Kevin Cheveldev, because it's, you know, we're pretty, as a GM, you make very few moves throughout the year, especially a year of evaluation. But what's your impression been of him so far?
Well, you know, you're right. It's really hard to give him a grade. The grade will probably come this time next year. He's really spent a lot of time. He's followed his blueprint. So if you're going to give him credit for anything, it's that. Is that, you know, they've talked about developing their young players and building through the draft and all those kind of things that are really hard to measure instantly. So I like what he's done, but now he really goes under the microscope as far as I'm concerned. Now they're going to head into their second draft. You know, there's always a pile of moves that teams make around the draft, trades, and they're going to have to, I think, get more involved in free agency, not to go out and buy six or seven players, but really find a piece to help them. I like what he's done in terms of not wavering, I guess, is the best way to put it. And as I said, I think now we're really going to see what kind of GM Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to be in the next couple of months.
Ed Tate from the Winnipeg Free Press, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy tonight's season finale.
Appreciate it, guys, and apologize again for coming on late.
No worries.
That's all right, Ed. See you tonight.
Ed, take care.
Thanks, Ed.
Ed Tate from the Winnipeg Free Press. Let's go to break. When we come back, we shift into playoff preview mode. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. A big thank you to Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press for joining us. Still to come today, Craig Custance of ESPN is going to be joining us, and Eric DeHatchik of the Globe and Mail is going to be joining us. You do not want to miss either of those interviews. We actually recorded them earlier, and they are fabulous, informative interviews that are top-notch. You don't want to miss those. Shifting our focus now to the playoff preview as we are getting into the playoff season. It begins on Wednesday. Regular season ends today. Really, the only matchup that we know for sure is the Pittsburgh-Philly matchup.
Yep.
4-5 in the Eastern Conference. Pittsburgh as the 4 seed, Philly is the 5 seed, and it happens to be the matchup that everyone is can't wait to see, especially after last Sunday's histrionics between the two teams.
They play again today. I don't think anything really will happen today because the game means nothing.
Right.
You can't switch home ice. Pittsburgh has home ice, so.
Yeah, I think tonight in today's game they'll just sort of let things sort
it'll
of
be interesting.
Simmer.
Yeah.
Simmer without having it boiling over. But I do not think it'll take long once those two teams meet in the first round of the playoffs for that series to boil over.
Drew, last year, the best series in the first round was unquestionably Chicago-Vancouver. This year, the best series in the first round is going to be Pittsburgh-Philly. It's already going to be the best series. You look at this season, and Philadelphia has surprised me. I thought they were going to take a step back after trading both Carter and Richards. And the way those two teams have played each other, if there's one matchup where the two teams really do hate each other, it's this series. And you've got Tony Granato and Peter Laviolette, you know, going at each other on the bench. It's hilarious to watch that clip, and Pierre Maguire in between them. But Philadelphia's beaten Pittsburgh 4 times out of 5 this year. Philadelphia's played Pittsburgh very well this year, and you know, I still like Pittsburgh in the series, but I think what you're going to see in the series is it's going to be an absolute war. You're going to see guys going at each other, and you know, with all of the comments with you know, Sidney Crosby and you know, Tortorella taking shots at them. I mean, you know, everyone's gunning for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh might not be, you know, in first place, but people are gunning for them now that Crosby's back. You know, everyone knows that if you beat Pittsburgh, the Stanley Cup goes through Pittsburgh.
Is there any way that either of those two teams escape that first round without having significant damage, for lack of a better word, to the rest of their Stanley Cup hopes?
Yeah, I mean, you can do that. I mean, you can play a war in the first round. Still, it makes it tougher for you, for sure, but it really depends on how you do after. I mean, if you're playing 3 7-game series coming into the final, if that's happened recently, I don't think it has, then you'd be worn down. If you play a 7-game series and play a 5-gamer and a 4-gamer, then it changes things. So, yeah, Drew, I mean, it really depends on what happens. This series is very complex in terms of matchups. You have a guy like Dan Bylsma, who's a very good coach, and then you have Pierre Laviolette, okay? This is what's going to happen. The Flyers shut down Combo. They miss Chris Pronger. So let's break down what's going to happen in the games.
Sure.
We can talk about it. You know, this team looks great. What's going to happen with the matchups? How are these teams going to play against each other? The Flyers' shutdown pairing is now Nicklas Grossman, who they just recently signed to a four-year, $14 million deal.
That happened late last night.
Yeah. And Braden Coburn. That's a shutdown pairing now. Pronger's not there anymore. Grossman's not a great skater. Gets a puck out of his own zone. Nothing special. But he's solid on his feet, and he's tough. Coburn's a great skater. Moves the puck well for a big guy. Not the most offensively capable guy in terms of quarterbacking, but he can do it. But he's big, strong, and he takes away, and he can take away a lot of space with his long reach. That he's going to be matched up. That pairing is going to be matched up against Malkin line, likely. Malkin, Neal, and Kunitz. So that's what you're going to have there.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but that, to me, that's advantage Pittsburgh.
But it's interesting because this is where matchups come into play. They're going to put out Grossman and Coburn probably religiously against that line, but also their fourth line of Couturier, Ronaldo, and Talbot. Talbot's ability to know about that team and that line helps.
You're talking about the forwards will be able to defensively combat against that.
That's
team.
That's right. Now that presents issues for Dan Bylsma, because that five-man unit essentially that will play against Malkin quite a bit. How do you play the Pittsburgh back end with that? Do you put out an a pairing like they've been doing of Letang and Martin, which is essentially your second pairing on Pittsburgh? Do you put that pairing out so you get the offense starting from the back end up to Malkin? Because if you do that, what you are doing is then playing your second pairing against the other team's fourth line, meaning your third pairing, which I think is quite weak in Matt Niskanen, Derek Engelin,
has to play against one of the top three lines of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Or more an issue, even the top two lines.
Sure.
One of which is Briere line or Giroux line.
Right. And I mean, we saw what the Briere and Giroux line can do against, I mean, against mediocre,
during the regular season.
Against mediocre defensive pairings.
And you watch that, and what Laviolette does is he'll put Jágr on the right wing of Giroux sometimes, he'll put Jágr on the right wing of Briere sometimes. And you have Simmons. Yep. And you have Hartnell. So how do you match up? I have questions about Pittsburgh's defense. I love Pittsburgh. They're a great team. But this is the worst matchup possible for them.
It's a bad matchup. And like I said before, when you look at how Philly played Pittsburgh in their division this year, they played them really well and scored a lot of goals. And you're absolutely right. As far as I'm concerned, this series is, you know, it is a bit of a cliche, but it is going to come down to special teams as well. Philly's going to try to, right off the bat, set the tone in Pittsburgh and get Pittsburgh off their game. It's simple. Any team tries to do that. But especially a team like Philadelphia, who has the ability to get under your skin, and Pittsburgh is going to have to basically stay out of the rough stuff business, even though I wouldn't be surprised if this series starts off with a bang and, you know,
Malkin
a couple
loses,
guys
Malkin
drop their
loses
gloves.
His cool a lot against this team, and can Crosby play the same
Absolutely.
Way he tries to play? They're going to run Crosby.
Well, let me ask
about Crosby.
Who's Crosby going to match up with?
Well, this is the next point. So Crosby's line generally will match up against Kimmo Tiemann and Matt Carl. Mm-hmm. Tiemann is a very good all-around defenseman, not what he once was 5 years ago, but still very good. Carl, great skater, good puck mover, a liability defensively a bit. So that's going to be a big issue. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's going to be a huge matchup for Philadelphia. Now you look on the other side. Orpik and Mihalik, who are their two shutdown guys playing together now, they're likely going to match up against Giroux's line, being, for the most part, Giroux, Simmons, and Hartnell.
Yep.
That's a tough line.
Been arguably one of the best lines in hockey.
Then the question is, does that free out Briere, Jágr, who they rotate back and forth with Simmons to match up what they want. And then they have Braden Schenn right now playing on the left wing instead of Van Riemsdyk, who's injured.
Right.
But what happens is, it's very interesting to see Laviolette does. He'll play Schenn on the left wing sometimes, then he'll throw Briere on the left wing and Schenn at center, because Schenn can play center, and you get Briere a little bit free against a different matchup. So that'll free up some space. Now, what happens on all of that? Now, Jordan Staal's a huge factor here, obviously. But what happens in all that is the third line of Philadelphia becomes very important.
Okay.
Because they will generally be freed out of matchups.
In that they'll go out and they'll play and they won't have to be...
They'll probably be up against Niskanen and Engelin. And Matt Reed, great skater, good shot. Voracek, good passer, hard worker, good skater. He's a dangerous guy.
Yeah.
Eric Wellwood's been playing there now, but if Schenn drops back down there...
If Van Riemsdyk gets healthy, what...
Exactly. So there's many options here. This series will be tremendous in the way of matchups. And to be honest, I mean, Malkin and Crosby are better than any other two centers in the league. But Giroux and Briere are darn good.
Yeah.
I mean, you're matching up four of the top centers in the NHL.
You are. And what happens then is, my question is this. Orpik and Mihailuk, really good defensive players. The question to me is Paul Martin, who has not been great, and Letang, who has problems defensively. Can that bottom four of Letang, Martin, Englund, and Niskanen handle basically the second, third, and even fourth lines of Philadelphia? Now, of course, there's a question of can Carl and all those guys handle Malkin and Crosby. Those questions arise, too. I think this is a complete coin flip series.
How much?
I think it's a coin flip. I think you throw up this toonie we have right here. 5 out of 5 would be one team. 5 out of 5 would be another team.
How much will home ice advantage and the last change factor in?
Well, we haven't talked about goaltending either.
Okay, well, let's talk about goaltending.
Obviously, Fleury gets the advantage over the unpredictability of a guy like Brisgolov. Any night, they can both be great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Fleury is the better and more confident option if you're a betting man. Now, as I think the other question is home ice.
Right.
Both teams have enough depth that the matchups are important. But, yeah, home ice is a factor. If I have to say the odds on it, you know, 50-50, maybe because of home ice, 51-49 at the most.
So you're discounting the impact of home ice.
I think the Philly has proved before they can get their matchups that they want on the road.
This is a little food for thought here. I mean, Pittsburgh has 28 wins, 10 losses at home. Philadelphia is one of the best road teams in the league at 25-12. And, you know, I've already mentioned it twice already, but Philadelphia has played the Pittsburgh Penguins very well in Pittsburgh. I think if there's any series where home ice advantage doesn't matter that much, it's this series. I mean, Philadelphia, the entire year, has been one of those teams, at least to me, that has played extremely well. And with a bunch of new players, Matt Reed coming in as a rookie. I mean, a guy like Matt Reed comes out of nowhere and has a phenomenal season. And then you look at the Braden Schenns, the Sean Couturiers, all of these guys that have stepped into a lineup and they're arguably deeper. Not up the middle, Richie, like you said. Up the middle, Pittsburgh's the best team in the league.
That's right.
But if you look at the third line of Philadelphia, and you look at the fourth line of Philadelphia, is there any other team in the league that has that depth on the third and fourth lines? And Richie's bang on. It's going to come down to those matchups, and I think it's also going to come down to special teams. Pittsburgh is top five in the league in both power play and penalty kill, and Philadelphia has also got a great power play. This is going to be a 7-game series. I'm going to take Pittsburgh. I'm going to take Pittsburgh. But I'll be shocked if it isn't 7 games.
We'll win the series on the power play if they win it because Philly's undisciplined.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pittsburgh power play is not that great.
Absolutely.
Aside from Jets fans thinking that it's actually great because the Jets have a bad penalty kill, Pittsburgh's power play isn't that great.
That's true. It's actually surprisingly poor.
Yep.
Especially for, you know, when you put the offense that they have up there out on the ice.
Drew, just one thing really quickly. If Winnipeg Jets fans know one thing about the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's that they can score at will. And if you take penalties against this team, they will absolutely burn you.
Pittsburgh's penalty power play percentage has improved dramatically. It's up to fifth in the league now.
Oh, is it now?
19.6%. Okay. It was struggling for a long while. Yeah, there was a stretch, I think, about a month ago where they were with something like one for the last 40 or something.
I think that's going to be the determining factor.
Well, while we're at it, I'll check the penalty kill percentage for both teams. And I mean,
Pittsburgh is top five, third or something.
And that's where Philly's only middle of the pack, 16%. Pittsburgh is third in penalty.
I think I read somewhere that the success on the penalty killer power play over the season doesn't necessarily translate to any kind of success in a series and in the playoffs. And one of the main reasons for that, and I believe that to be correct, and one of the main reasons for that, of course, is that you're playing against one team.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they know your strategy. I mean, it's not like, you know, these guys come in at 6 o'clock and they get the power play and penalty kill reads from the coaches. These guys, they know for 7 games what they're going to be facing. So it's adjustments, it's matchups, which I think Bilesma is very good at. But Laviolette is also good at that. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is here. I got Philly in 7.
Philly in 7 for Richard.
I picked Pittsburgh to win the cup before the year.
You can't do that though.
It's fine. You can do that. It's a whole new season, as they like to say.
Yeah.
Richie has Philly in 7. Remus, write these down on the other side.
Pittsburgh
there.
Pittsburgh in 7 for me, Drew.
And Ezzy has Pittsburgh in 7. I'm going to go with, I think it's going to be Pittsburgh in 6 myself. Does anybody care about my predictions though?
Of course.
Yeah, we care.
Just making sure. Pittsburgh in 6 is what I'm saying. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue with our NHL playoff preview. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly before 1 p.m., we continue with our...
Yeah, the Beatles, wicked.
We continue with our playoff preview show.
Well, this is the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah, that's right, sorry.
The Stones?
Yes,
yeah,
the Stones.
The Stones. Are you guys done?
True, we don't miss you, though.
Thank you. Don't worry. You'll miss me for 2 weeks. I'm gone for the next 2 weeks.
This is your last show before you're to be wed.
Oh. It's true. It's my last show before my nuptials.
You can't wait for the stuff we got planned for the end of the show here.
There's things planned for the end of the show?
You bet.
Well, we're going to end the show early tonight there, folks. Good night. Anyways, let's continue on. Devils are likely going to be playing the Florida Panthers.
Yep.
If the Panthers get 1 point tonight at home against the Carolina Hurricanes, that will be locked in stone. They should, because Carolina's got nothing to play for, and I would assume Florida wants to give their home fans the chance to cheer a Southie.
Don't go crazy there.
Well,
they're home fans.
They're few home fans of the Southeast Division.
People who were given free tickets to the game, you mean.
Whatever. Not important. It doesn't matter, but let's hope that they'd like to win something on home ice.
Yeah, something like that.
So we're assuming that the Devils are going to be playing the Panthers.
Yep.
Does anybody see any way that the Florida Panthers defeat the New Jersey Devils?
Yeah, I do. I actually do see Scott Clemenson starting for the Florida Panthers and coming back to burn his old team. But no, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, the season series, each team won 2 games. The Florida Panthers still might not win it, obviously, but we're going under the assumption that they are going to win the Southeast Division. But a team like the New Jersey Devils, you know, we're going to talk to Craig Custance about it in the interview coming up. But really, they're the one team that is flying under the radar. And sure, you know, Marty Brodeur isn't the goalie that he was the last time the Devils won the Cup in 2003. But the New Jersey Devils still have tons of firepower. And Travis Zajac is back, and I look at
you can't understate that.
Absolutely,
that changes everything.
A guy like Ilya Kovalchuk, you know, has quietly had a bounce back year. Last year was his first year in New Jersey, and he didn't produce. This year he's been great. Zach Parise, nobody's talking about this guy. Zach Parise has been a good player for them all year. Patrick Elias is, you know, back up to 70 points. They have a lot
of. Peter Sikora is back up to 70 years old.
Exactly, and
he has 20 goals this year.
Offensively, the Jersey Devils are absolutely stacked. And you're right, Travis Zajac Richey is a game changer. There's issues on defense. The New Jersey Devils definitely do not have a Scott Niedermeyer anymore. Yeah. And you know, I definitely am
Adam
going.
Adam Larson's been a healthy scratch lately.
That's true, and I do like.
Has he hit a rookie wall?
Well, I guess a healthy scratch.
When you're 18 years old, I mean, yeah. you're. There aren't many 18-year-old defensemen that come in and take the league over.
Yeah.
Just see Victor Hedman. So, I mean, I'm going to pick the Devils here, but I don't know if I quite think the Devils are more than a one-round team this year.
And the Devils versus Florida, if that is how it happens, I think is not the most interesting series. I think the Devils are the favorites here, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Florida is going to match up with their defensemen. Now, the Florida team as a whole is fairly weak. You can be pretty sure that they're going to match up Kulikov. It shows what they think of Kulikov because he's playing more than Jovanovski. Kulikov and Weaver. Weaver is their best defensive defenseman, best penalty killer, underrated player.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to probably match up Kulikov and Weaver against Zajac, Kovalchuk, and Parise. No matter how you swing it there, that's a mismatch. And I think that people mistake the Devils as a trap team because that's what they've always been. They're an aggressive team. They're aggressive in the neutral zone. They're aggressive on the forecheck. I think that their aggression will result in many turnovers. I think a lot of their game, they're good in transition, especially that first line, because the second line is not very fast. But the first line is very good in transition. And I bet you'll see 2 to 3 goals simply based on turnovers by the defenseman, either in the neutral zone, by the Florida defenseman, either in the neutral zone or in their offensive zone when they're getting pressured off the forecheck. And what happens there, Drew, is even then you have like your Brian Campbell and Jason Garrison, good, you know, two good puck movers. That's the case. What you have is you have a Devils team that's going to log out, you know, Elias, Zubras, and Sikora. Maybe say the Florida plays them straight up there pretty well, you know, with the Weiss line or whatever their second line is going to be. The third line for New Jersey, this is why Zajac's so important, because here comes Henrique. And you got Henrique now playing with a guy like Ponikarovsky and Clarkson. Clarkson can score 20-plus this year. Ponikarovsky can move the puck. He can do some damage. That's a good third line. You know, will Florida throw a Gudbrandsson and Jovanovski, kind of their third pairing, and they'll match up against them? Yeah, and I think there's some positives and negatives to both sides there. But I think the Devils' scoring depth is going to be an issue for Florida, and I think that's where, you know, the Florida's defense isn't great, and then when you have is Florida's second, third, and fourth lines. You got Samuelson and Gotch and Bergenheim and, you know, Wolski's not great, and Thias. I mean, you have a lot of guys there that, you know, they're past their prime, but they haven't really been that great. I think the Devils and the Florida scoring after line one is going to hurt. And I think at the end of the day, Brodeur isn't what he once was.
Mm-hmm.
But Florida's goaltending isn't anything great either.
Right.
And I think you have DeBoer, who knows Florida. The players have changed, but DeBoer was in Florida. That's a motivating factor for DeBoer. I like the Devils here, and I like the Devils in five games.
Yeah, and Theodore is... I'm going to say this much. I'm not going to be surprised if... Theodore hasn't been good down the stretch. He was better at the beginning of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if Clemenson goes in for Theodore.
I think Clemenson's a better goalie. They both stink. I mean, let's be real.
Clemenson's better.
And Berger isn't anything special anymore. Berger's not very good. But, I mean, both those goalies are pretty bad.
Well, hold on. Not this year.
No, he's a Hall of Famer of all time. Hasek's the best goalie of all time.
Disagree.
Is he your prediction?
All the numbers say Broder. I'm going to take the Devils in six.
I got him in five.
And I'm going to say the Devils in four. It's a sweep.
Oh, in four.
Yeah. Wow, Drew.
It's a clean sweep.
Get out the broom, Drew.
Get out the broom. It's a clean sweep for the Devils. Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, Craig Custance from ESPN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, remember to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. If you want to get caught up with all of your latest Winnipeg Jets news, you can check out IllegalCurve.com. And the news is all listed there. Earlier, we had the opportunity to speak with Craig Custance from ESPN. Here is audio of that interview in which we break down the Eastern Conference playoff race. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Craig Custance of ESPN.com. Craig, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Happy to be here.
Thanks very much. Craig, you know, we're going to focus on the Eastern Conference with you. We're in the midst of our Eastern Conference playoff preview. Really, ever since last Sunday, the series that everybody's most been talking about and most been looking forward to is the Pittsburgh-Phillies series. You know, how do you see that series breaking down? Who do you see as the favorite in those, in what seems to be two very evenly matched teams?
Yeah, it's a shame that we're going to lose one of those two teams in the first round, because I mean you could make the case for either the Flyers or the Penguins to be a team that you could see coming out of the Eastern Conference, and one of them is going to be sitting at home. But I mean, you ask for the favorite right now. To me, it's the Pittsburgh Penguins, and simply put, I mean when you talk about what you need to construct a playoff hockey team and a team that's successful, they have all those combinations. You want that strength on the middle, and there's not a better trio of centers in hockey than Crosby, Staal, and Malkin. You want good goaltending, and you want playoff experience, and they've got that in the Pittsburgh Penguins. The only thing they didn't have was a little bit of luck. I mean, it's the one team that's not afraid of the Penguins, or not the one team, but the Philadelphia Flyers certainly aren't intimidated by the Penguins. And when you talk to people about beating Pittsburgh, they say, you know, you got to play them physical. You can't respect them too much, and you have to give them a little pushback. And, I mean, boy, we know the Flyers do that. And so that's a horrible draw, in my opinion, for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I expect that to go seven. And ultimately, I still think Pittsburgh comes out of it, but you wonder at what cost, if they can survive after what should be a grueling first-round matchup.
Craig, is there some concern that the Penguins' defense is maybe not what it's been over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a concern, and I know that was the, you know, concern internally. They don't like to be giving up goals at the pace they were, especially down the stretch when they got everybody back. But, you know, it's funny. It's so hard for me to get a beat on some of these teams in these final couple weeks. I mean, when you really look at what some of these teams are playing for and what they weren't playing for, and you know, I think we're going to have a really good idea of what kind of team this Pittsburgh Penguins team is right away in the playoffs, and whether or not they can shore things up and not exchange so many chances and not leave their goalie out to dry. But I expect them to shore some of that up.
Rangers and Boston are going to be, you know, two original six teams are going to be 1-2 in the Eastern Conference. Which one of those teams do you see as more vulnerable?
Whew, that's a tough question. I mean, as always in the playoffs, it comes down to matchups. And you know, I don't know if I necessarily see either one is really vulnerable, especially not early on. I mean, you like both of them have that goalie in Lundqvist with the Rangers, and I'm a little bit concerned about the hand injury there, but... And then with Boston, of course, you have Tim Thomas. So I you know, you like that. You have playoff experience. I mean, the one question mark, I would say probably with both teams is you worry a little bit about their depth. I mean, I'll start with the Rangers. They have the high end scoring with Marian Gaborik and you know, of course, Brad Richards. But and you wonder, do they have enough guys when let's say they give up 3-4 goals? Do they have that kind of scoring offense to keep up with the team? That concerns me a little bit with the Rangers. And the Boston Bruins, I mean, you look at what they lost compared to last year's playoff team. They don't have Nathan Horton, who's probably not going to play. They don't have Mark Recchi. You know, they're missing a couple other of those forwards that were so good in the playoffs for them. Michael Ryder's now in Dallas. I mean, that was a – those are important players. And I had one scout tell me, you know, it's almost like they have – now they have two fourth lines in Boston. And that wasn't the case last year when they made their playoff run. So those are my concerns. But I don't think either of those teams necessarily vulnerable.
The New Jersey Devils, maybe over any other team in the Eastern Conference, are flying under the radar. And that might be because they were just atrocious last year. And they are a bottom seed. What do you think their potential is? Do you think they're a team that can do more than just get out of the first round?
You know, it's such a tough call with the New Jersey Devils, and I agree with you. I was talking to a few of their guys yesterday. They came through Detroit, and I had that conversation with Martin Brodeur, saying essentially, you know, for years they'd always go into the playoffs as a favorite, and there was a lot of pressure on the Devils. And you miss that one year, and he's like, it's almost now like the forgotten team. I mean, they still had 100 points this season, can tack on, you know, a couple more. They have that offensive depth. They have a goalie who's done it before. I'm a little concerned about their defense, although as a team they do a good job of protecting them. I mean, they don't give up a ton of shots. They're only giving up 2.5 goals a game. So, you know, the question, I think they have certainly a better path than some of these other teams. I think that'll play into their favor. I just wonder about their defense. If they don't really have that shutdown pair, and you wonder how it's going to hamper them if they get later on into the playoffs. But, you know, they're certainly kind of that sleeper team that I wouldn't be stunned to see if they made a little bit of a run here.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Craig Custance of ESPN.com. Craig, two teams that we're very familiar with in Winnipeg, having seen them, you know, the Jets play them 6 times this year, are the Panthers and the Capitals. Do you see any way that either of those teams can win a first-round series?
I would say, I hate to say it on Florida, but no, I just can't. And, you know, of course, the second you say this, they're going to go out and sweep somebody, but... I mean, you just look at that team. Their goal differential is a minus 27. And yeah, I like their depth at forward. I just, like, I'm not ready to hitch my wagon to Jose Theodore. I worry about their goaltending. And I, you know, I've looked at that team up and down and tried to imagine a scenario where they get out of the first round. And I don't think it's going to happen. Now, Washington, to me, is the interesting team out of those two, because I could see them upsetting a team in the first. And you know, I mean, it would be a pretty big upset if they knocked out the New York Rangers in the matchup now. But, you know, the Capitals are interesting to me because when you talk to their players, and I've had this conversation with Alex Ovechkin, I had the other day with Brooks Like, and they said, look, we've gone into the playoffs as the favorite, and we've done everything we've needed to do in the regular season, you know, and piled up a bunch of points. And that didn't work. And so, you know, instead of putting things in cruise control in February, which they had to do in the past in Washington, I think they're kind of internally hoping that this struggle and this resiliency they've shown a little bit here is going to help them in the playoffs. And, I mean, they still have that high-end talent with Ovechkin and Backstrom and those guys, and a little worried about their goaltending and the health there. But, you know, I'm not counting Washington out as pulling off an upset.
Craig, you know, we talked earlier about vulnerability and with respect to the Rangers and Boston, but you spoke about matchups, and matchups really are the key, especially in this league when there's such a small spread between the top and the bottom teams in the playoffs. If you're Ottawa, would you prefer to play Boston or New York?
Oh, man, that's such a tough call. I don't know which one. I mean, I probably wouldn't want to play either, but I would say I would probably rather face Boston, I guess, only because, you know, who knows how much fatigue is going to set in. They've had this stretch they've had some stretches this season where they weren't playing like themselves. They weren't playing kind of that Claude Julien hockey. And so, I mean, maybe of those two teams, and again, I like both of them, but maybe they're not as hungry as the Rangers. The Rangers are kind of along that natural progression where they've made the playoffs the last couple of years. Now it's kind of their time to make a run. I love that core group. I love John Tortorella. Is not going to back down from anybody, as we've seen over the last couple of days. So I wouldn't want to face either of them, but I think I'd probably be a little bit more leery about facing the New York Rangers.
Craig, it's funny. You mentioned John Tortorella, but to us, it seems that there seems to be a lot of hate for the Pittsburgh Penguins organization.
Yeah.
There's obviously, you know, some bad blood between Tony Granato and Peter Laviolette. But do you think that all of this, you know, animosity, if you want to call it that, towards the Penguins organization, is this justified, or is this, you know, people maybe having a little bit of an inferiority complex, or you know, just maybe even also pre-playoff banter?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a little bit of that playoff posturing going on, and you know, I think the point some of these guys are making is, I mean, even if you go back a year, I mean, the Penguins have been out front on the concussion issue with Sidney Crosby, and we've seen, you know, Mary Lemieux come out and be pretty vocal about how the league has handled certain things, and so, you know, I think some other teams have a hard time when, it, you know, we saw it last year when Matt Cook was doing, you know, stupid things, and he's cleaned up his game, but, you know, whether it's the Brooks Orpik hit or, you know, they have a hard time for, you know, to kind of square the Penguins complaining on one hand and then their players doing other things on the other hand. And so, and then you factor in the Sidney Crosby factor where people just don't like him, fans especially. I mean, I'm in Detroit, and there's still fans here based off of those finals 2 years in a row that they just hate Sidney Crosby. In fact, I driving in and listening to the radio today, going on to Joe Louis, and they're playing John Tortorella clips, and I can't remember the last time I heard that on Detroit radio. So I just think it's, you know, it's the team at the top, and everyone's targeting them, and I guess that's what happens.
Yeah, you mentioned John Tortorella. I guess we have to ask you, aside from Ezzy's little run-in with him last week in Winnipeg over a question, he seems to be, you know, he's never been the calmest guy in town, but I mean, he went off after the Winter Classic, with, you know, and Philly is involved in that game. Then he goes off about Pittsburgh, and he's going off about Peter DeBoer. Is he trying to make enemies with every playoff team in the league?
I think it's just John Tortorella being John Tortorella. Like, I don't know. It's just certainly a lot more magnified. So if he's doing that in Tampa, I mean, I imagine on some level, who cares? But now he's doing, you know, the Rangers are the best team in the league, and he's taking on Sidney Crosby, and he's on this huge stage at the Winter Classic. And I mean, he's always been this way. It's just it's getting more attention because the Rangers are a team that are expected to play for a Stanley Cup, and he's just, he's not going to back down from anybody, and he's feisty, and I think the players rally around that. And I think on some level, I talked to some guys at the Flyers after Laviolette tried to scale the wall to get it at Granato, like you mentioned, in the Penguins bench. I mean, the guys love that. They love to see their coach that are into it, and Laviolette's another guy. We saw it behind the scenes in the HBO series. I mean, those are both two coaches that are into it, and they're fiery, and they're not going to back down from anybody. And I think they are trying to set the tone going into the playoffs. And especially when we've all kind of labeled Pittsburgh as the favorite, I think it's clear the message is going to be, you know, they're not backing down from the Penguins, and they're going to be heard at some point in these postseason.
Craig, you knew this question was going to come. Last question: who do you have as the Eastern Conference representative in the Cup Finals?
I haven't officially sat down and done this, so I'm going to request a permission to change my mind if I start talking.
We won't hold it against you.
Permission granted.
As long as you don't choose eight teams.
That's right. I still think the Pittsburgh Penguins are the team of the East. I'm a little concerned about some of the scoring, some of the goal scoring against them lately. But I just, you know, again, assuming Sidney Crosby stays healthy, but just the strength on the middle, the experience, the goaltending, the depth they have now, that's probably the best supporting cast around some of these guys we've seen in a few years, and James Neal emerging. I can't see anybody beating them if they stay healthy. So I'll go with Penguins.
Craig Custance from ESPN, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's my pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Enjoy the playoffs. Thanks very much, Craig.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
Come back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Craig Custance from ESPN. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. See, that's what I'm going to have to do for the next 2 weeks. I'm going to have to download the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and listen to it, because I'm going to be away. Yeah.
Where are you going?
I'm off to Kentucky for my wedding. I don't know if you knew that.
We're gonna miss you.
Yeah, I know.
You
guys will be there for one of those weeks, so.
Yep, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, assuming you make it there.
Yep.
Remo in with us next week.
Yeah.
And then we're just, after that, it's going to be mayhem.
Just chaos, eh? Just sheer chaos. Anyways, we'll keep you up to date on that as we get closer. Let's continue on with our playoff preview. If the Ottawa Senators get 1 point today, I believe that would clinch them seventh spot in the Eastern Conference.
Devils have nothing to play for, right? So
Devils have nothing to play for. Ottawa needs 1 point. Boston is firmly in there at second spot in the Eastern Conference. So you'd be looking at a Boston-Ottawa first-round matchup. Let's break down that series. You look at those two teams. Boston, Ottawa played earlier this week. Boston, I think, went into Ottawa and defeated them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was 3-1.
You know, how do you see that series playing out there?
You know, I've been trying really hard, really hard looking at this series, 2 versus 7, Boston versus Ottawa, and I've been trying to find a reason, aside from the fact that, you know, Ottawa has really surprised a lot of teams this year, and, you know, Spezza and Alfredson have been awesome, and Erik Karlsson on the back end has been terrific, but, you know, Boston's defeated Ottawa 6 times, and, you know, going into this series, I mean, I guess Ottawa has a little bit more momentum and less pressure on them, and Boston has been pretty mediocre in the second half, but I still like, you know, Boston's depth. And, you know, I like their advantage. You know, Zdeno Chara is, you know, obviously he's been one of the best defensemen in the league now, Richie, for, you know, 5 years, yeah, if not longer. And, you know, in a 7-game series, I still like Boston, but I still think this is going to be a tough series, and Ottawa's going to give them a run, but I still like Boston.
You know, I think there's a couple of things that this series boils down to. The first one, of course, is Chara versus Spezza, because Spezza's that good, and he drives that line with Mihailik and with Greening.
Yeah.
But Spezza's a dominant player, and Chara's a dominant defenseman. Who wins that battle?
Two guys who know each other.
Traded together, yeah, essentially, because Spezza was drafted soon after that trade was completed.
Exactly.
With that pick,
yeah,
with Chara and Spezza for Yashin.
Noted hockey expert Mike Milbury.
Yes. And then and that's going to be a really interesting matchup. I don't think it's as one-sided towards Boston as maybe some others do. I think that Boston's depth on defense is going to be called into question again, whether McQuaid gets back there, and, you know, is Corvo going to be counted on, another former Sen, to play minutes? Seidenberg will be important. Johnny Boychuk returning from injury. I believe he'll be ready for the playoffs, as I read this morning. That's a key factor as well. But I guess one big question here. I mean, can the Senators handle Boston's depth up front? We'll talk about that in a second. But one big matchup here to me, Ezzie, is Turris, Foligno, and Alfredson,
yep,
against the second pairing in Boston there. It's going to be the Seidenberg matchup, generally, mm-hmm, speaking. And to me, Ottawa's going to give them some trouble. If Ottawa can get good goaltending, again, of course, that's a cliche saying, but if Ottawa can get good goaltending here, because there's no guarantee from that, I think Ottawa pushes this to 6 or 7 games.
I absolutely agree, and I think it'll be a long series. And you know, Boston's roster's remained relatively unchanged. You don't have Mark Recchi, and you don't have Michael Ryder up front, but you've still got they've picked up Brian Rolston. He's actually done really well, got a goal the other night. But I tend to agree with that. I mean, you know, Boston picked up Greg Zanin, and he's all right, and, mm-hmm, you know, he's been, you know, around the block with a few teams, Minnesota and Nashville.
I like Zanin.
Zanin's a good defenseman.
And he's playing, as he just quickly, just so we can note to other listeners, he is playing, I have it here, Zanin and Seidenberg have been playing together. It's the second pairing, and I like both those guys.
Yep.
But that's going to be an interesting matchup. Keep going.
Yeah, and I just look at the Boston roster, and, you know, the first series we previewed today in the Eastern Conference was Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and we talked about the depth of those two teams, yep, and arguably the team with the best depth is Boston. I mean, there's a reason.
I don't agree.
There's a reason why they got past the... They got to the Stanley Cup Finals and obviously won it. And, you know, they arguably don't have a star. David Krejci hasn't been good last year, and he was obviously phenomenal. But especially
without Horton, Ezzie, let me quickly get in. Without Horton, though, isn't there the line that's going to be the real deal here? Sagan, Bergeron, and Marchand.
Absolutely, During parts of the season, Richie, that line has looked phenomenal, and other times, you know, hasn't looked that great. And it all starts with David Krejci again up the middle on the top line with Lucic and Peverly, which is really, you know, has less firepower than the second line. So
right.
Absolutely, Nathan Horton is a huge loss.
You can't take him out of your lineup. You can't take Nathan Horton's a top six
30
forward.
Goal scorer. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't take a top six forward out of your lineup and not expect that it's going to come back and hurt you.
But what is Ottawa's backing going to do about it? I mean, is Kuba and Karlsson, that's going to be your top pairing? And now, are they going to put the veterans together in Phillips and Gonchar? I like Cowan a lot. It's been interesting to see how he performs in his first go around the playoffs. Obviously, Karkner can be victimized. He's not the best offensive player, and he does have to, he's not a great player, period, really. But I think the Senators' transition game, I think their ability to score in bunches, and I think the way that they skate and put pressure on the opposing team, Boston's got to buy into their... Boston hasn't been gelling as well. I mean, they're second, but they didn't really, you know, they didn't grab second by the neck.
Nope.
And you know,
Ottawa was in second as recently as, 6 weeks ago?
Yeah, and think about it this way, guys. I mean, the third is terrible, too, right? I mean, there's other teams that are better than Boston here. I think the Ottawa Senators can really get give them a lot of trouble. Now, Thomas is obviously another X factor. But remember one thing about Boston last year, guys. They won the Cup, and they were great. But they were all of one shot away from being out in the first round.
Sure. I mean, but that's and that's usually how close the margin is in a lot of these playoff series.
Remember that Ottawa plays such a high-tempo, risky kind of style that... Will Boston engage them in that? Boston can't engage them in that. Because if Boston engages them in that, they're going to lose.
Yeah. Ottawa wants to play run and gun.
Yeah, if it's going to be 2-1, 3-2, Boston's going to win the series. If they're going to slow it down, they're going to win the series. If Ottawa gets to play their pace and they can get some goaltending, they could upset here.
Absolutely.
Right? I think the series goes 7 games. I'm taking Boston. I think the series goes 7 games.
It strikes me as, you know, Ottawa's playing with house money. You know, they weren't, everybody had them at the bottom of the Eastern Conference for the most part at the beginning of this year.
Absolutely.
They have nothing to lose, and they strike me as a team, you know, if, for whatever reason, Boston just doesn't seem like their focus is as strong. I don't know if it's because they won last year, because of their injuries, because they have some built-in excuses, maybe. But, you know, for Ottawa can play with reckless abandon because they have nothing to lose. If Ottawa goes out in the first round, their fans aren't going to be upset about it.
That's right.
So, you know, go have fun, boys. Have fun, boys, is what Ottawa's going to say. And if you pull off, you know, and there's always one playoff series each year that features a team that makes a run.
Now, Ottawa's third and fourth lines aren't great. We got to talk about that. And that's going to be an issue. But Boston's third and fourth lines aren't as good as they were before either.
Exactly.
Because you're moving guys up like Peverly who were there before.
That's right.
So, I mean, that's a factor as well. I still like Boston's third and fourth lines better than I do Ottawa's. But they're not, Boston's in third and fourth. Their depth isn't as good as Craig said in the last segment. Isn't as good as it once was. Ryder gone, Recchi gone, Horton injured.
Yeah. When you talk about the best players on a team and arguably the best all-around player on Boston is Patrice Bergeron, but when you talk about the best players, the two best players in the series are on Ottawa. I mean, you look back 2 weeks ago when the Jets were struggling against Ottawa. Specifically I was talking about forwards.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And you know, when the Jets, you know, I mean, Ottawa is a really good team. I mean, they've shown that Spezza has had an incredible bounce back year. And, you know, Spezza took the minor penalties, remember, 2 weeks ago and then came back and scored one of the nicest goals of the year against Winnipeg. I think if those guys are on their game, and there's no reason to believe they weren't, you know, Daniel Alfredsson, as one of the oldest guys in the league, is still getting it done.
And he's having so much fun
playing with
his kids.
And he's having a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm going to go with Boston in 6. Again, and I realize this might be a cop-out, but I won't be shocked if I'm eating my words and Ottawa wins. I won't. I just can't find any other reason to like Ottawa aside from the fact that they've got so many guys playing unbelievably, and Carlson's a great story, but I just can't overlook Boston's depth. So I got to go with Boston.
I got Boston in 7.
You have Boston in 7, as you have Boston in 6?
Yep.
You know, Senators in 7.
Wow.
You know,
by the way, have we had none of the same picks so far in these first 3 series?
I think we've been different in all of them. Remus is keeping track, so we'll post those on.
Well, we're not sheep here at Illegal Curve.
No, we just eat sheep.
Right.
Yeah,
mutton.
You've eaten some sheep.
Mutton.
Yeah.
Sheep is mutton, right? Or mutton is sheep, isn't it?
I don't think so.
Or is it lamb?
I'm not sure.
Undesirable
never
meat.
Never had mutton.
Should we go to break?
Thanks for mutton.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do one final series in the Eastern Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.